Marina Rav Shlita, Lilur Nishmas, Gittel Bas David, Lachai Maruchim, to you and all the family. Alright, some eyebrows were raised when they saw on the notice that I'm going to talk about the marshmallow test. Well, here it is. It's a book by Walter Mischel. I think he's Jewish. Well, he looks it, certainly. He's a professor of humane letters in psychology at Columbia University. He's on the National Academy of Sciences, American Academy of Arts and Sciences. He has won Distinguished Scientific Contribution Award in the American Psychological Association and another award in psychology. Anyway, so what's it all about? Well, if you read the subtitle, then you'll get an idea why I'm talking about this in the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. It's called The Marshmallow Test, Mastering Self-Control. And he gives an approach which isn't simply willpower, don't do it, and that's it. That is not really what Teshuvah is about, and that is not what the marshmallow test is about. A child is presented with a marshmallow and given a choice. Eat this one now, or wait and enjoy two later. In the book he talks about 20 minutes. What will the child do? What are the implications of that child's behavior later on in life? So the test was done on children below the age of 4, okay? And it's very compelling for them when a marshmallow is put in front of them. Do they eat it straight away, or do they wait? He's proven that the ability to delay gratification is critical for a successful life, predicting higher SAT scores, better social functioning, a healthier lifestyle, a greater sense of self-worth. But is willpower pre-wired, or can it be taught? Are we going to say people are born with their predispositions and that influences them heavily in life, or do we say that one can educate oneself? So in this book he explains how self-control can be mastered and applied to challenges in everyday life, controlling weight, quitting smoking, overcoming heartbreak, making major decisions, planning for retirement, and of course we'll try and make it into a shiur rather than a lesson in psychology. But I quote to you some of the phrases from this book, which is very interesting and addictive reading. He asks this question: is the ability to delay gratification pre-wired, or how can we change? How can self-control be achieved? He said, not by toughing it out or simply saying no. That is not really the way. He says, we talk about willpower, and it's all right. You can resist a cup of tea or even a piece of chocolate when it's offered to you. But the Yetzer Hara is very, very compelling. And how is it that we fight it? Certainly, learning Torah is the real medicine, but there are other things which can be looked at, and he doesn't talk about discussing Torah in this book, actually. And how do we achieve it? He says we have to change the way that we think. He talks about the subject of smoking. Huge sign on the packet. You see people buying in the shop, and there's this huge lettering, smoking kills. It's willpower's failure. People say they'll quit smoking, they'll start going to the gym, they'll stop having quarrels with their spouse or otherwise, they won't have dessert, and that's all part of New Year resolutions, and come the end of January or after Sukkot, as the case may be, it all seems to fall by the wayside. I mean, Yom Kippur, we've been here before, we've got the t-shirt, we know we've been through this process. Are we going to approach it in the correct way, or do we approach a different way? He asks, what enabled these children to delay the gratification? So he actually questions the children. And he asks them, what did they do to try and make sure that they managed to delay gratification? And the interesting result in the long term was that those children who managed to train themselves very young to delay this gratification or to withhold it, they were the ones who became more successful in life, because he monitored them over a period of 30 or even 40 years. And what was interesting from the children he observed who were delaying gratification was that they adopted distraction strategies. They might have covered their eyes, stared sideways and refused to look at the marshmallow, or just say to themselves over and over again, I'm waiting for two marshmallows. Or they might have pushed the tray away, and there was also a bell there which he asked them to ring if they decided to give in and eat the marshmallow. So they would push the bell away or the tray away, or they imagined various other kinds of fun distractions, like some children would start making up songs or poetry and looking away from the marshmallow completely. Some even went to sleep. Good remedy in a Duff Yomishir. There's one child he called Simon, page 39 of the book. Simon was 9 years old, and he asked, "Simon, how did you manage to control yourself?" He said, "You mustn't look at what you're waiting for, and you mustn't think about nothing, because if you think about nothing, then you will end up thinking about the marshmallow. So if I say to you, don't think of a white bear, you will immediately think of a white bear. So the idea is, don't even think about marshmallows and don't think about nothing. You have to think about something else. You have to actively distract. You might make up a story." One child said, "Well, what I did was I imagined a frame around the marshmallow as though it were a picture. And I can't eat pictures."
This is under four.
Yes, the main exercise was done with children under four, but they were doing it with other children as well up to the age of nine. And progressively, as the children got older, they recognised that the self-control became better and better. And his biological aspect, is he talks about the prefrontal cortex of the brain, which is the bit which exercises self-control. And he says it's not fully mature until, believe it or not, the age of 20, which is very interesting, because Chazal tell us that to be chay of misa b'din shemaim is the age of 20.
That's when you earn a living, isn't it? Sorry.
Well, we should be earning a living. Yeah. Below the age of four, he says the rate of self control is virtually impossible for the. But by the age of 12, so he goes in progressions. By the age of 12, he says you've got a 60% success rate amongst his children with the marshmallow test. He says that if a person is in stress, that they lose that self-control. It's much harder for them to be able to exercise it if they are living in stressful conditions. Which is interesting, because the experts on addictions, like smoking, gambling or whatever, they talk about the word halt, which means hungry, angry, lonely or tired, and those are the times when people slip most easily in their addictions. He also says on page 65 that if a person is going to say no to the marshmallow, it mustn't be debated. It has to be just a straight, quick no. That's it. As if you're saying Yiddish, Azoy Shteit, no debate. If you start debating, well, maybe, and it's not going to do me any harm. Actually, it's a good idea to eat the marshmallow because it's less calories than two marshmallows. But if the purpose of the test is only to wait and to delay the gratification, if you enter debate, you're likely to fail. So he says the go response, which means to eat the marshmallow, is likely to win if there's no well-established if-then plan. So you have to have a strategy. Because if you know you have a certain weakness and you're going to fall into that weakness, then the best way of combating it is to have a strategy of what to do instead. If I feel tempted, then instead I will. So that means that if I'm going to have a cigarette, I'm immediately going to go to the gym and go swimming. And that is the distraction which will stop you from having the cigarette. He quotes Aesop's fable about the grasshopper and the ant. The grasshopper jumps around enjoying life as it is now, but the ant is busy putting away food for the winter, for its later survival, explaining how in life we have to try to behave not like the grasshopper, but like the ant. And I found here so many interesting parallels with writings of Rambam and others. And he says on page 95, while much of what makes self-control less effortful is pre-wired, that we do have dispositions, and this in fact is in the Rambam, in Mora Nevuchim, in his Chelek Beis, chapter 38, people have predispositions to certain tendencies. Some people are strong, some people are weak. But nevertheless, much of it remains open to learning. And it's interesting because Rav Desselin, his Mikhtav Meliyahu, talks about the Chira in a number of places, and in his very beginning he says the wrong mistake that people make is that they think that the Chira is simply subject to one's own environment, that free will is an influence of the environment which you are. Well, it is to a great extent. But nevertheless, you will always be in a situation where you will still have choice between good and evil, between right and wrong. But the question which I'm really looking at is, what if a person feels as though that what he wants to do is so compelling, in fact, he doesn't really want to do it? Sometimes a person has a strong addiction. It could be to drugs, as we spoke about smoking. It could be all kinds of ideas. It could be chocolate, you know. We all have tendencies or habits, and sometimes it's so compelling that we feel as though we don't really have the free will. So is there such a thing as free will in such circumstances? Is there Bechira? The Rambam and others make it clear that when you have free will, it is very clear and unimpeded. It's one way or the other way. Sorry. Hashem puts into us a free will between one way or the other way. So what if you feel it's compelling? Do you say that you have to be able to train yourself and remove yourself from the impediment in order that you can exercise free will? And it's interesting because Chazal and Pekei Avos say that a ben Torah is a ben Chorin. A person who engages in Torah, who lives Torah, learns it and practices it, is a free person, because he becomes free from the temptations and the addictions and so on and so forth. Or do we say that there may be circumstances when a person finds it so impossible that he will succumb to temptation that he doesn't really have free will at all? So the Rambam in Hilchos Teshuvah, in Perek Vov, in Halacha Gimel, he talks about Paro and others who were sinful, and what Hashem did was he punished their sin with sin. That when you look at the 10 plagues which were given to Egypt, you don't get this expression in the first 5 about Paro's heart being hardened. It's only in the second 5, or most of the second 5, I think one of them, it doesn't exist, where it says, and God hardened Pharaoh's heart. So what does that mean? It means he took away his free will. Is that fair? The whole world is based upon free will. It's not right, surely, to take away free will if a person should be given a choice. But what the Rambam explains is that since Paro was being sinful against the Jewish people in the ways that we know, so then Hashem was saying to him, right, I'm going to force you to say no. I'm going to force you to say you're not going to let the children of Israel out of Egypt. Why? Because that way the people of Israel will recognize that I am Hashem. So much so that in Beshach, when it comes to the climax, towards Kriyas Yamsuf, it says, V'chizakti eslev Paro, and I've hardened Pharaoh's heart, and it says Veskol Chelo, and his whole army. And then it says the Umitzraim Kiani Hashem, and they will know that I am God. What does that mean? It means that Hashem is taking away their free will. He's controlling their minds. And the Ramban says this is the greatest miracle of all, that Hashem can control the minds. This is not just a hypnotist on one person. It's a whole army. Veskol Chelo. And when Hashem does that, that is a miracle. That is against the laws of nature, because normally people have free will. So here we see a case where the free will is taken away from a person. And it's true to say that if one does an Aveiro repetitively, says the Sefer Cheshbon HaNefesh, the first time you do it, it takes something a bit away from your personality. It gives something negative to you. But when you do it progressively, it's another notch each time. And that eventually, Chazal say, you treat it like a heter. You treat it as though it's allowed. So that is the problem of doing things progressively. So even if you start once, that's the problem. But we were talking about personalities, and we're not all paros. Does that mean that free will is taken away from us? And indeed, the Rambam writes that one man easily becomes angry, another one is naturally calm and never gets angry. One person might be pure-hearted, one person has greedy tendencies acquired at both. Nevertheless, one can learn from others. But he says everybody has a form of free will. If one desires a good path, it is within their reach. So has Hashem decided who is going to be wicked? No, he's told the prophets to warn us, so he wouldn't be changing that format, or would he? So the Rambam in Shmona Prakim amplifies on this, chapter 4 and chapter 8. He says it's impossible to be born perfect or imperfect, but it's true a person might be predisposed to certain behaviours. It's interesting when you look in Bereishis, Vayar Elokim Kitov, Hashem looks at his various forms of creation and he says he saw that it was good. So you've got the flora and fauna of the world, the planets and so on. But when it comes to creating a human being, it does not say Vayar Elokim Kitov. Why? Because Yetzer Lev Adam Ra Min Urov. Because the heart of a person may be bad from his childhood, and therefore he has to work on it. And the Gemara Nidah Tesayin says, an angel places the seed which is going to be conceived before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asks, Creator of the world, what shall become of this drop? Is this person going to be strong or weak? Wise or foolish? Rich or poor? But the question, good or bad, does not come up. And Rabbi Chanino there says, Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz miyiras shamayim. Everything's in the hands of heaven except for the fear of heaven. All these other things Hashem has decided, but when you have the choice, that is given to you. And it raises many questions. Bechira is a very difficult subject. And you've got this Gemara in Shabbos, in Kufnun Vav Amud Beis, which talks about the mother of Rav Nachman, who was told by an astrologer that your son is going to end up being a thief. And this worried her greatly. So she tried to do things as much as possible to train the child that he would never come to steal. It says that she would keep his head covered at all times and taught him how to pray continuously. But once, when this child was young, and he was sitting below a tree, and the cap on his head fell off, and he saw dates on the tree, and he was so tempted to take them, and he went and he picked off a branch, and he ate these dates. So you could say, you see, he didn't have the chira, or did he? This is the problem, the balance between predisposition and the protective measures which you might introduce. But if there's no free will, there's no purpose of us living in this world. So both Torah and the psychologists seem to agree that one can learn new patterns of behavior. And this is what this book is about. It's fascinating. How one stops the vicious cycles which enter a person's life, to train oneself to enter these different principles. And that's why the Rambam writes that one should put oneself in the company of others who are good people, the company of the righteous, because that has an influence on a person. There is such a thing as peer pressure. It's the very beginning of Tehillim. Ashrei asher shelo halach ba'atzmus roshoyim uvederech hatorim le'omod ki besoras Hashem chefta. Don't sit amongst the wicked. Don't sit amongst those who might influence you. Don't think that they can't have an influence over me. Live in an area which is good and conducive to yourself and to your children. Sometimes we criticize Noah before the flood. We say, Samim Hoya Badarosov, so there's the view, he was okay in his generation, but had he lived in the time of Avram or other generations, he wouldn't have been such a tzaddik. But he's described as a tzaddik. But there is another view, and that is, why didn't Noah go out and influence others like Avram Avinu did? Because things were so bad in his time that he knew that if he goes out there and tries to influence people, there'll be no chance. He will then contaminate himself and his family. So that's the problem of balance. And the Gemara Yuma in Lamed Ches says, Rab Amar Rabbi Yochanan, if the majority of your life passes and you have been able to abstain from temptations, then you will be in a situation where you will no longer transgress. Whereas Rav Shila writes, if you're exposed to Avera several times and did not transgress, then one will not transgress anymore. Rav Huna says, but if a person transgresses and repeats it, it becomes like a heter, it is permissible, and he's deluding himself. He turns into denial. And that's in Yom HaPevov. Rambam writes, if you repeat good tendencies many times, it becomes a fixed part of your personality. And this is in the Mesilat HaShoarim as well. But the question which I'm asking is, there are some people who say, look, I feel so compelled to do what I'm doing, even when I'm in the company of good people, and I've learned the Sifrei Musa, and I've been to Shiurim, what am I doing wrong? Because I'll say, in Pekei Avos, Yofet Talmud Torah Derech Eretz, Shiyagiyas Shnei Mashkeches Ovon. It's a wonderful thing to learn Torah, and to have a worldly occupation, because they both lead you away from sin. What does that mean? Not only learning Torah, but if you go to work, you have a job, and you're busy, and you don't have spare time on your hands, then you're less likely to go astray. Shigiyah Shnei Mashkeches Ovon, which is the idea of distraction. The psychologist's tool. But to understand the power of habits can be so strong until one feels one can't control it, and one might say, well, I'm not like Toro, I haven't been sinning continuously, I have a strong predisposition to something. What does one do? Do we say that even the strongest form of lust can be overpowered? Or do we say people are still liable to stumble? A person can claim that I was born with this and I can't help it. What is the answer to that? Well, short of saying that a person might be mentally unstable, a person has to be healthy, normal, able to exercise his bechira. I found the Shemesh Shmuel who answers this question. He quotes the Rivash in his Tshuvas, and he says, what if a person has made a Shavua that he will never ever gamble again? So he's got this gambling addiction. So, you're right, Chazal frown upon gambling, Masachet B'Kuvia, if you do it for a livelihood, if you just have a flutter on the horses or on the national lottery, Poskim say that's alright if you don't, you make it your livelihood. But what if a person has this addiction and he feels he just can't control it? I heard somebody recently, I heard of, in 5 days, he gambled away £18,000. I mean, such is the mentality. It breaks up marriages. It does enormous harm. So he says, if that person has made a shavua that he'll never gamble again, it is osur for him, min halacha, to step anywhere near to a casino. I mean, this was before the internet he was writing. You know, the Rivash wrote a couple of... he was a Rishon already. He wrote in the Middle Ages, 1400s. He says, that person who has this disposition to gambling, who makes a shavua that he won't gamble, he mustn't do anything, min halacha, min adin, which might trigger himself to become compelled to do it. That is to say, that we accept he's got no bechira anymore when it comes to gambling. He's got no choice. He hasn't got free will, recognizes the Rivash. But where has he got the free will? He's got the free will on the triggers.
But if he's making the Shavua over a mitzvah he's commanded to do anyway, then it has no effect. You know, how can you make the Shavua you're not going to gamble, you're not allowed to gamble anyway?
Well,
it's frowned upon. We talk about Pasula Edus, but that's when it's done as a livelihood. The Gemara discusses that it's a form of theft because the other person doesn't really want to give the money away, and that's why gambling is frowned upon. But if a person does gamble and it's not for his livelihood, min hadin, there is nothing actually wrong with that. I mean, national lottery, I know of Rabbonim who do it, so there's nothing wrong with that. But if a person makes an oath that he will not gamble, then he has created an Isser on himself, right? He's going against a Shavua, and that's already an Isser D'Araisa. So, you know, you can make a Shavua that you're not going to drink milk, and then it becomes Osser to you.
Yeah, but you can't make a Shavua that I'm going to put on tefillin every day. Or I'm not going to put tefillin on every day.
Yeah, you can't make a Shavua against something which is Kosher B'Torah, because you made a Shavua at Har Sinai, which is true. But we've chosen a topic which is not strictly, I mean, the question is about smoking. You know, is it against the din or isn't it against the din? You know, we've got plenty of Rabbonim who say it's clearly against the din because it's well established against your health. But you do get some viewers who will say, well, Shomer Pasayim Hashem, and is it direct, and so on and so forth. It's not advisable, and people who do it know they shouldn't do it. But the Torah doesn't say thou shalt not smoke.
I was told a joke by Rabbi Chaim Rappaport. What if the Torah did say you should not smoke? So the Reform would say it's outdated, don't do it anymore. The Masorah thought he would say, well, the rabbi shouldn't suppose, and the Orthodox would sell their lands to a goy to get around.
It's interesting that you quote Rabbi Rappaport, because on this subject we're discussing today, he's got some very interesting views in the way he interprets the Rambam in Perek Lamed Ches, which I've quoted just before from Mor Nevuchim, because he feels that there are certain persons who are born with such strong predispositions that maybe they don't have Bechira. But it's a controversial subject, so it's not for today. But we can amplify on that later. So the Rivash says that don't go near the triggers, because if you are near the casino, then you will feel compelled to walk in. So Chazal say, don't walk within Dalad Amos of a Mesonus. It's for a person to know what they're, and that's why many Rabbonim are against free, complete internet use, because of the temptations which may arise if there are no actual controls on it. People have to know themselves and know what their triggers are and know where to avoid the pitfalls. That's the Rivash. So the Bechira is not in the actual Aveira itself. He says the Bechira is in the triggers. It's the same strategies as we find in the book about the marshmallow test. Try to avoid the triggers. If you feel you don't want to eat that marshmallow or piece of chocolate, then avoid the triggers. Put that chocolate out of sight, out of mind. Don't buy it. When you go into the newsagent and you see the chocolates, just close your eyes to them, because those are the triggers. They always, and in the supermarkets, they deliberately put these things right near the till just in order to tempt you. Whereas if they put it in a far-flung corner, then you'll miss it. You won't be so tempted. They deliberately work on your weaknesses. That's the problem. So the life we get in Torah is very parallel to the issues which are discussed in this marshmallow test. It's the same strategies. But in discussing all this, and in now the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, and trying to speak a bit untraditionally, such as marshmallows, do we really understand what the meaning is of a tzaddik and of a rasha? The thing that tzaddik, he does mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim all day long, he never does aveiros, the rasha is wicked, and Hashem judges the tzaddikim at the beginning, and the rashaim as well, and the beinonim, we wait till Yom Kippur. Yeah. Fine, but do we really know what the definition of a tzaddik is? Because in actual fact, if you look closely at certain pesukim and certain peirushim, it's not really what we think it is. There is a pasuk in Mishlei. Shlomo HaMelech says in chapter 24, verse 16, Sheva yipol tzaddik v'kom v'rosha ba'achas yipol. What does that mean? Seven times, maybe at least seven times, a tzaddik will fall, but he gets up. V'kom. V'rosha ba'achas, but the rosha, in one go, yipol, he will fall, and that's the end of him. So the tzaddik is always getting up. What does this mean? A bachur once came to Rav Hutna and said, I can't manage, I've got to give up, I just can't cope. And Rav Hutna said to him this pasuk. He says, you feel like you've fallen, but the tzaddik always gets up again. You stumble, you fall, but you pick yourself up. And he says, foolish people misunderstand this pasuk. Because foolish people, he says, think the pasuk simply means, all right, righteous people are those who fall and they get up again. That's not simply what it means. He says something much more profound. He says, as a result of the falling, that's what makes the person the tzaddik. It's that person who keeps stumbling but manages to get up every time, that is the tzaddik. Not necessarily the person who does purely mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim all the time, 24/7. He says the tzaddik is the one who does do aveiros, but he knows how to get up afterwards and recompense and get on with his life as if it hasn't happened, and then work for a better future. And this is an amazing chiddush, that it's the actual falling which makes the tzaddik, because a person learns from those mistakes and manages, and it's that growth which comes through struggle. So that means to say that you will be losing battles, but eventually you'll be winning those wars. And Rav Hudna writes very interesting about this, because, and he's quoted by Rabbi Franz, you get all these books now on the market, really interesting biographies about the Chavetz Chaim and about the Stipler and about the Chazon Ish and about Rav Moshe Feinstein, and you read these books and they're wonderful books and they're great for the kids, they're really nice, but they do create, he says, an impression that, you know, these were angels, they were the malachim who could never do any wrong. That they were washing their nagel vasad by themselves at the age of 2, and they learnt Mishnayos by heart, the whole set, by the age of 6, and by the age of 12 they knew Shas by heart, and they were writing Sforim by the age of 20. That's what these Sforim say, yeah, and it's wonderful. And we did have wonderful Gedolim, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Chazon Ish, and others, the Mashgiach of Nir, and, you know, yeah, as if they're all perfect from the word go. But Rav Hudna says that's not really true. They all had their struggles. Don't kid yourself. It's just the art scroll has censored those out. And when you read these books, what's our reaction? They feel as though these guys were not normal. You know, didn't they want to go out to play with the lads and do other things and maybe nick some dates off the tree or an apple here and there? You know, it's in the temptation of a child, and when we grow into adults, we have got other temptations as well. That's not how it works. He says the Gedolim also had their struggles. He says, you think the Chofetz Chaim didn't struggle with the Issur of Lashon Hara? Of course he had a struggle with it. It's not written about that in the book. No, they've censored that out. But that is the truth. And Rav Hudna said, Avol mi yodea, who really knows what struggles these Gedolim had? The Milchomos, the Micholos, the Mephilos. They fell, but they got up again. Nikotz Rav Tzadok HaKohen. He talks about the pasuk Uvoa Ovdim be'eretz Ashur v'hanidochim be'eretz Mitzrayim. Ovdim are the losers. What's Eretz Ashur? A very hilly, stony area where they had to fight to work properly, but it was very hard. Ovdim, they're the losers who would give up. V'hanidochim, hanidochim are those who are pushed aside be'eretz Mitzrayim. So Mitzrayim, you know, you get a good harvest, you work, but you might fall a bit, but things won't be so bad. So he asks the question, why do we refer to the Ovdim first, the losers, as if they are more special? Surely it should be the other way around. The more successful ones are the Nidochim, the ones pushed aside, but they get on. And the Ovdim, the losers, maybe they should be mentioned second. He says, no. It's the people who are lost who we mention first, because their struggle is greater to get to the top. And they manage to rise after they've fallen down. Rav Levi Yitzchok of Berdichev said that we should really be running our lives according to the way toddlers, babies behave. In three ways. When we think of Teshuvah and we are about to enter Yom Kippur, he said, think of three things that the baby or toddler does. Number one, he cries to his parent. Number two, he's always busy. If they're awake, they're always wanting to play with the toys and start and get hold of a box of matches or do other things which are lying around the house and put them in their mouth. They're busy. We always have to be busy to do something and not just sit back and do nothing. And the third thing is that when the toddler falls down, he always gets up. And that is the category of the tzaddik as an adult. If you fall, you pick yourself up again. And what's very interesting is there's a Gemara in Brachas, Daf Yud Beis, which says, Bikshu likvoa Parshas Bolok. The rabbis wanted to institute in our davening in the mornings, together with Kriyat Shema, the Parsha of Bolok, the prayer of Bolok, where he says, Hein am klavi yokum v'chari yisnafsom. The way the Gemara talks is, well, it's Tircha D'Tzibura, you know, we got the Aseret Dibros to read, and we got other things to read, and Parshas Hamon, you know, we're not going to bother the Dibur so much. They've got to go to work after Shacharis. But the intention was that there would be a prayer to say in the mornings or from Parshas Bolok. Bolok Harosho. Yes. Just like we say, Ma Tovo Lecha Yaakov Mishkinosecha Yisrael from Bilon. What is this pasuk? Hein am kolavi yokum. The people will rise like a lion cub. and raise themselves like a lion. That the whole principle of Klal Yisrael is we've lost out in many ways. We've suffered in so many ways. We've had pogroms, we've had holocausts, but we've always picked ourselves up. Says the Sfas Emes on this Gemara, Mipnei sheyesh bo shivchon shei Yisrael. That is the strength of the Jewish people, that we get up after we fall. Says the Midrash Tanchuma, he says we might go on for years sleeping, but then we manage to get up like a lion. There's an interesting book written by someone called Gideon Hausner. He was a lawyer and he was an attorney general in Israel, and he headed the trial of Adolf Eichmann, Yirach Shemo V'Zichrono. And in his book, he says that Eichmann visited Treblinka concentration camp. And he proudly had taken from a synagogue which he destroyed the peroches, which covered the Aron HaKodesh. And in an act of cynicism and mockery, he hung this peroches up at the entrance to the guest chamber. What did this peroches say on it? It's not clear, but it seems that Eichmann didn't understand the Hebrew that was written on this peroches. It says on it, Zeh Hashar Lashem Tzadikim Yovovo. This is the gate of Hashem which Tzadikim will walk through. What an amazing message to people who have to walk through into the guest chambers. A final message of their lives. But says Rav Rand on this, he says, but this is the characteristic of the Jewish people. We have suffered. We can't explain it. But the Jewish people have picked themselves up. And that is our category as a nation. We've always picked ourselves up. We never gave up. Hein am kolovi yokum. If they didn't give up, neither should we. That is the message of the Aseres Yemei Teshuva. And that the definition of a tzaddik is not necessarily what we think it is. That he is somebody out of reach who only does mitzvahs and mice and tovim all day long and never even thinks of doing something wrong. The tzaddik is the one who falls but gets up afterwards and manages to make a go of his life. That is why we should all be entering Yom Kippur and claiming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our davening, okay, we have been sinners, we have fallen, but now we've picked ourselves up. We can be, and we will be, all tzaddikim. Wish you all a gemach siva tova.